All right, we are back for, I did check, it is actually episode 40. I went,
all right,
looked at my math, so episode 40. Yeah, so let's jump in. I think the thing we need to talk about first is obviously what we were just watching, why we're 15 minutes late, right? So the Artemis 2 is on its way, which is, as we were talking about, really cool.
We're going back to the moon. That's exciting. It's been 50 years, they said?
50 years, yeah. It would have been like Apollo 17, I think they said, or something like that. Like 1972, I think, was the last time they went to the moon with a human, like a human in a ship.
Right.
Yeah. So, and it was cool. In the broadcast, they had the last surviving astronaut who walked on the moon on the broadcast there for a minute, so... They were just talking to him.
Oh, that's cool.
That was kind of neat, right? Very neat. So yeah, I'm probably not going to watch the stream on YouTube. I'm just going to leave that in the background.
Because that's more interesting anyways.
Yeah, you took the words better than I know. All right. Where do we want to start? Let's jump into the AWS news for the week. And there's a couple things here that we've talked about a bunch of times in previous episodes. So the first one... is actually there's a whole whack of GA releases. So Bedrock Agent Core now has out of beta or pre-release or whatever they call it, preview, evaluations, which was really cool. So now you can essentially evaluate the agents and their responses to test against your criteria and essentially grade them, for lack of a better word, on how they're responding to whatever they're being asked to do.
Gotcha. So you can kind of fine tune it on your environments then, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it said that you can work it right into your pipelines. It's got, AWS has a bunch of built-in evaluation tools with it. And then there's also like custom, you can build your own custom evaluations using Lambda functions.
Okay. Is that through CloudWatch Metrics also, or is it
I don't really know. I just looked at the blog release. I didn't get time to look at the documentation, but it's basically saying, hey, you can use our built-in stuff or you can build your own custom evaluations if you'd like. Up to you.
Sweet.
Yeah. Kind of cool.
Now, are there any other agents? So are they just doing this one, or are they doing more in like a broader sweep?
Yeah, I
like this agent.
I don't know. This is related to Agent Core, right? So
okay.
I was just going to say, as you made that comment, like I got to spend more time with Agent Core.
Yeah.
We seem to talk about this every other week, and I keep saying to myself, "Oh yeah, you better sit down and figure some of this out." And then I get busy with something else and I think about it when I talk on Wednesday nights, right? So they keep releasing new stuff for this. I think it's definitely worth a bit of investigation. Hey, my Echo is a half an hour behind.
Alexa agrees.
Yeah, yeah. So that was the first one. Thought it was cool. In GA now, probably worth a look.
Sweet. Yeah, they're pushing news items for these. It feels like every week now. So
yeah. Yeah,
I have to take a look at this eventually.
Yeah, they're gonna just beat us over the head with it long enough that you're gonna eventually have to use it. The next one, another thing that we've talked a lot about is the DevOps agent. It's now in GA. So
okay,
announced at reInvent in November, been in free preview until today or yesterday, whenever this article came out. The thing that I don't know if it always did this or is new with GA is it's not AWS specific. You can extend this outside of AWS to other cloud providers. You can also use it. I hope I'm not getting this mixed up with the other one that I'll talk about in a second. You can also use it on-prem.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. Right?
So they've developed like a general purpose DevOps tool that you can run. I bet you it's running Kira on the back end then, but that's really interesting.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Right. Which, when you think about it, it actually makes sense for them to, I'll call it, build a hybrid solution, right? Because you can't, like, this can't be the only sort of, I'll call it, persistent agent, this idea of having something in your environment that's essentially analyzing what's happening and trying to figure out problems and resolve them for you. I haven't done a lot of research on this, but you would think there's probably tons of these solutions that are out there right now.
There's going to be more, I'm sure. I mean, this is like a, it's like a proactive monitoring thing, tool that runs in your environment. So it's kind of like ClaudeBot in that way.
Yeah.
And I guess Anthropic's moving kind of in that direction with, or the, all the labs are kind of running, moving in that direction with their move to copy ClaudeBot and that kind of architecture. And this is just like a DevOps specific version of that, it seems to me.
Yeah. And it kind of gives them a bit of a stickier solution, right? Like, you have to think that in larger enterprise or larger organizations, you're not just dealing with AWS. You're dealing with probably a mix of AWS and something else, whether it's another cloud provider, whether it's on-prem. And this now gives you a solution that works across all of those things rather than saying, well, you know, the DevOps agent is great, but it only works in AWS. And what do we do about these other pieces? So now they've sort of, you know, headed off that argument maybe.
You know, what's really interesting is, as someone who's kind of doing SRE work right now, this makes a lot of sense to me and something you would want. Like, for what I'm doing, the way I'm using these tools in our environment is that if I need to diagnose something or troubleshoot something, I can kick off a bunch of agents to go pull some logs and review those, right? Mm-hmm. And if you have something like this spinning in the background, that's kind of ideal, but you can just shoot a request off to have it go and pull that info. So yeah, it makes sense.
Makes sense, right? I didn't look at what regions it's supported in. I know in the preview, it was US East 1 only, so Northern Virginia. I didn't notice in the news release if along with GA, it's now supported in other regions.
Okay.
But it is no longer free. So the pricing is based on the amount of time the agent is actually working on tasks. And that's priced at, I wrote it down because it's classic AWS, 0.0083 cents per second.
Per second, okay.
Yeah. Right? And I didn't write down I looked at the pricing page because it wasn't in the release, in the news release. It just said, check the pricing page. So I went and looked, and they gave you, there's three different types of tasks that it could work on, like triaging, investigation, stuff like that. But they're all priced the same. So 0.0083 cents per second.
So it's just runtime for the actual agent. I wonder if you can spin up multiple in parallel too, or it counts that.
I
have to check that out.
I'd sort of be shocked if do you mean like it might fire off multiple agents itself as it's doing work, or do you mean you could multiple agents?
I'm sure you could spin up multiple tasks for it, right? But like, yeah, if it has like parallel agent capabilities to go off and explore various logs faster or get metrics faster, that kind of thing, and divvy that up.
Yeah.
I wonder.
That would make sense. But then you would also, putting my customer hat on, like, okay, if you tell me you can fire up sub agents and stuff, and all those sub agents are also running at 0.0083.
Yeah.
I need to control. I'm okay with it taking a little longer if it manages my bill. So that's actually a really good point, though. I wonder how it does that, or if that capability is there. This is another thing that's been, we've talked about this before. It's been on my list forever. And I just, most of the stuff that I'm doing is in CA Central 1. So I purposely wanted to deploy some stuff in US East 1 to try this, and just never got around to it while it was in preview. So now I'm going to have to pay for it to try it. But
I wonder if
it should be something you look at.
Yeah, definitely want to check this out. I also saw there's some new integrations I'm just looking at now. Like, you can plug PagerDuty into it in Grafana.
Yes.
And EventBridge, Azure DevOps. So that's pretty cool.
Pretty cool, right? Right? Yeah.
I'll have to be. You see it now?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to try it. And I've got did you notice in there, if you're looking at it, does it say anything about region availability?
Let me see what I can find.
Okay.
But yeah.
I'll watch Artemis as you're quickly Googling.
6 AWS regions, US East, North Virginia, Oregon, expanding into Europe and in Frankfurt and Ireland, and okay. then Sydney and Tokyo. So okay. no Canada yet, no Canada looks like.
Yet. Yeah, yeah. Well, I might take one of my personal projects and deploy it in US East 1 just to try yeah. this, fire it up, right?
Might as well.
Yeah, give it a whirl, right? And what's the worst
Something thing you
for 0.0083 cents per second? The environments aren't
yeah, just put so. Throw something in there you don't care about an outage happening for, and you'll be good to go.
See what happens. There's the segue into the next agent that we've talked about a lot. Another Frontier agent announced at reInvent was the security agent. And again, this confuses me a little bit because they very specifically said on-demand pen testing is now generally available. And I admit, I don't know a lot about this particular product. My understanding was that it did more than pen testing. So I'm a bit confused or need to do more reading. Like, are you saying only pen testing is GA and everything else is still preview? Because I thought it did more than just pen tests.
I think it does do more than just pen testing, but this is the pen testing feature that's now generally available.
Okay.
Like, I think it also integrates, I remember from the previous releases with your scanning utilities, your guard duty, that kind of thing. So inspector, et cetera.
The other thing that's really cool about this is it also now supports multi-cloud. So just like the DevOps agent, it supports AWS, Azure, GCP, on-prem, making that sticky product again, right? And the other note that I wrote down here was, like, if you're a smaller organization, you know, I can imagine that the budgeting around doing regular pen testing might be challenging, right? Like, you know you should do it, but you might not be able to justify it for the costs. This thing is running at $50 per task hour. And again, there's like a bunch of things that they define as what it could do during that. But the way I read it was like, hey, if it's running an automated pen test, you're going to get charged by the hour that that pen test is running. So for 50 bucks
that makes
an
sense.
Hour. Right.
To pen test? I mean, that's pretty good. You're going to, even if you hired a security team in-house, you're going to pay more than that in terms of. So I guess it's going to depend on the quality of the product you're getting out of that. But
Right. So, and the other thing is even though it's in GA, if you sign up for it, you get a 2-month free trial. So that would also be, that's what I always liked about, I think Guard Duty had that when it first came out. I think Security Hub maybe still does have that because some of the price, like this is a pretty basic pricing model. You're paying.
Yeah.
I think it's, you pay by the second, but it's in like hourly increments or something like that. I'd have to double check, but regardless, it's a pretty simple pricing model to understand, right? But it's still nice to have a 2-month free trial because like there's no risk to you saying, okay, I'm going to try this on our environment. And you could then say, all right, well, it took 2 hours to run. So therefore, every time I do this, it's going to cost me about $100, assuming that everything else stays the same. At least gives you a benchmark or an idea of what to expect if you decide to use it past that free trial. I think it's good and good idea to try.
Yeah, I found a pricing blurb on their blog. And so $50 per task hour, meter per second. And then there's estimations, like a small web application is about 8 hours, a medium e-commerce platform, about 24 hours, and then a large enterprise app, about 48 hours. Okay. So you're looking at $400 to $1,200 to $2,400. What's going to be interesting is how often does this get updated? Like, how frequently are they adjusting, adapting to new vulnerabilities, right? That's something you're going to want to pay attention to. So,
and then I think, again, is a theme that we talk about all the time, is it just comes down to math. Like, you know, if does something like this replace, like maybe you've got your own a vendor, right, that you use for pen testing, does it make that vendor, expendable isn't the right word, but I guarantee you somebody will do the math, right? They'll say, okay, well, last time we had pen test company X in, it cost us Y. If we use even those simple pricing examples, okay, we've got an e-commerce app, right? And you say it's going to be roughly 24 hours. Well, then you just do the math and maybe you try it once and see if it's the output of it is acceptable for what you need to do, right?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, is this good enough for your audit requirements, right? So does this get you through your SOC 2 or whatever you're trying to get through?
Yeah, the other thing I was thinking is, like, does it augment maybe what you're already doing? Like, in addition, like maybe a larger company, like, hey, we're still going to do this, but in addition, now we've got this other option. The other thing I wonder is, like, does this hurt, like, the open source scanning market? Like, if you've got budget, like, do you go and grab something off of GitHub anymore, or are you more inclined just to use this? I don't know.
Well, I guess that depends on how you're tackling this, right? Like, if you have an in-house team who are experts in penetration testing and are experts on your application, then probably you're going to have a process built around that, right? And then on the side, you can go and say, okay, every quarter, maybe we're going to run this on the app. It's going to cost us $2,500 a quarter, so 10 grand a year, right, to run this. And then it's just an extra tool for the security team at that point.
It'd be interesting to see, like, once it's sort of been out for a while and seeing how, because I'm sure there'll be stories about it, right? People will write about it. They'll have blog posts on AWS about it. It'll be interesting to see the different use cases and stuff they start talking about on how different organizations are using it.
Well, it's really cool to see, like, if you're interested in security, these agentic tools are really good at penetration testing and cracking into apps, I've noticed. Yeah. Like, we talked about a couple articles for people breaching AWS accounts, and, like, you have this thing that's going to go and crawl the list of known vulnerabilities, and you can point it to various open source runbooks and applications to go and scan for, you know, all the common vulnerabilities and then break into apps really quickly. So use it for good.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, you know what? My favorite announcement that I came across is actually the last one, and it's not a Gen AI related thing. You can now customize the services that are visible on the console.
Oh,
I love this. Love this, right? So you can even remove regions that show. So,
oh wow, okay. Yeah,
this just happened to me the other day. Okay, these are the three things we need to do. Okay, so we're gonna practice least privilege, and we're gonna give you those three things. That's what you asked for. Within like 10 minutes, I get a phone call. This doesn't work, and I'm like, well, yeah, it doesn't work because that's not what you asked for. But there's an error on the console. Yeah. That's fine. Just ignore the error, because it was an expected outcome based on what you asked us to give you the permissions.
Yeah.
Oh man, this for me, I definitely have to figure this out. You can do it through the console, or you can even do it programmatically.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So you can define a list of things you want to show. So you have you person who's doing application support, maybe have access to EC2, S3, and RDS, and that's it. And any of the interconnective services, I guess you could specify.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like this.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do you implement it? Is it at the policy level, like IAM policies, or is it like SCPs or what?
You're testing my knowledge on it. I don't know at this point. I would suspect they must have surfaced an API somehow that
they must have
programmatically modify what's on the console. But I literally came across this afternoon, and I was like, oh, this is cool. So I already have a customer in mind that I'm thinking I will pitch this on Monday to them, because I know in that particular case we have we have regular situations where people are saying, I can't see this, and we're like, yeah, it's fine, you don't have access to that anyways. So just ignore the big red thing on the console. It's okay. So like, I'm thinking like when we talk on Monday, it'll be like, hey, we should try this. It'll just cut down the noise.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. Those are my AWS news items for the week. A couple Gen AI related things and one quality of life, which to be honest is the things that
sounds like it's most needed.
I'm like, oh my God. Every time I'm scrolling through the RSS feed for this and I see stuff like that, I'm like, oh yay. I love this. <it. laughs> Made my week. All right. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say that killed like 100 messages a week for you or whatever.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. I just need, speaking of agents, I need an agent. I know
like a triage.
I know there are no such things as dumb questions, right? I get it. I ask my fair share of dumb questions, so I'm not judging. But I need an agent that looks at it and just goes, oh, this, we can just answer this. You don't need to answer this, right? And it just spits back the, it's okay that it's red, you don't have access. And then I just go on to the next thing.
You need an FAQ bot.
That's essentially what it is, right? Oh, that's awesome. All right, let's change gears and talk about the Gen AI news of the week. And I know I'm going to put you on the spot because we didn't talk about this, but we did mention last week if we wanted to spend a little bit of time between the AWS news and the Gen AI news, if we wanted to talk about tools, things you're working on, is there anything that you've done over the last week that you want to share?
What have I done over the last week? So what I'm working on right now is I've been doing a lot of reading about, I've been reading Vibe Coding by Gene Kim and Steve Yeagy, and reading a bunch of as much literature as I can possibly find on how to write a good harness, how to work with these agentic tools and loops well. Because I've been writing my own kind of similar to what you're doing, or pretty very similar to what you're doing with the second brain situation, right? Like I've also have my own pair of setup knowledge system that I've also deployed that to the cloud. And I've been writing my own essentially Claude bot, open Claude clone thing, and trying to get that working. Yeah. So that's the main thing I've been working on for like the past month now. And how about you? I know you've been working really intensely on that second brain situation.
So I've turned off 2 SaaS tools this week. And I know people will be Yeah, they're like, I know people will be like, but it's, you're not writing production code. Okay, I get it. Like, I think that's a silly argument. I think that's FUD in not in all cases, right? Like if you work for a financial company or something, you obviously you want to know exactly what's happening at every moment. I get it. But for the stuff that I'm doing, to be honest, I don't really, it does what I need it to do, right? So I turned off, I won't name anything because I've talked about Jira before, so Jira's gone. I won't name this. Sort of stick a dagger in it. And you know what I've found really interesting over the last week is now we're getting into sort of the application is there. It runs, right? I've been using it and I've been able to continue to stay, if you think about that Dan Shapiro article, I've been able to continue to stay at like that level 4, level 5 sort of grading system, if you want to think of it that way. Even through sort of iteration. So I'm using the tool and I'm like, I don't like the way this works. Or, when I click this button, I feel very much like a product manager. Like I click this button. I know it's doing something, but it's not surfacing something visually to let me know. And I'm the only user of the tool, but it's still weird. Like your brain immediately goes, is it working? Like, what's it doing?
Where's the feedback? Yeah.
So like what I've been doing is just as I stumble across these things, I write 1-2 sentences as a GitLab issue, mark it as a bug. And then at some point I fire up Claude and I'm like, okay, go look at these. Right. And I'm like, if there's not enough information, we'll brainstorm so you can fix it. But if there is enough information, just fix it. That's like literally my pseudo prompt. And I've just been amazed at how quickly it's like, oh yeah, I see what you mean. I've got Playwright in it now, so it tests itself. It's loading up the pages, and it's like, yeah, I see. I just amazed, man. I harp on this every week, this idea of personalized software. I had a coffee with somebody today, and they were showing me the app they made for their phone.
And yeah, phone apps?
It's unbelievable. It's just like what you and I were talking about. It's that person's second brain. He's got audio transcription in it. So he's like, if I'm out somewhere and I just think of something, I'm like, buy bananas, and it adds it to his list. And he's like, it seems silly, but it's just the way his brain works, and it's good for him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's perfectly customized software down to your use case, right? Which is really nice. The only thing is you have to maintain it, right? But the one thing I've noticed, like, is if you have that really quick feedback loop, like you were saying with that model, and you can set up your prompt to have it go and find issues and proactively resolve them, then you're going to have a much better time building that thing, right? Especially for web applications. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I primarily use Claude, and then I've got Gemini. I'm using it for like, hey, go look at the code base and tell me if there's anything in here that's radically wrong
or crazy bad. Yeah.
Like, it's really bad. I want you to identify that. And then I've got Codex. I've set up automations against all the repos where this stuff sits. And every day, like 7 o'clock in the morning or something, it fires up and it runs a scan against every repo, and it looks for bugs and stuff like that. And I'm still having problems because it's running in the sandbox. I know I can switch it out of sandbox mode, but it's able to do enough, at least at this point, to basically scan those repos and give me an update in the morning on what's going on. So I don't know, man. I'm turning off the newsletter software. The first non-SaaS newsletter will go out tomorrow at 9 a.m. Fingers crossed. I've been testing it
with a Batman, right?
And I'm like, I don't want the first experience of this just to be shit. But I'm like, I'm confident enough that basically a $35 a month SaaS platform will be gone by the long weekend. Because like,
wow.
Again, like the economics of it just don't make sense for me. If I'm sending emails every single day, maybe it makes sense to pay for a SaaS tool that's got, you know, routing capabilities, and if you click on this, I'll tag you this way. I don't use any of those features. It's like Word, right? The ribbon bar across the top has 900 options. All I do is click format. I don't need all that other stuff. So that's going to go away. The next thing is the podcast.
Sweet. Okay. So you're going to start publishing it via RSS on your own hosted feed. Yeah, you shouldn't have to subscribe. How much is it to host a podcast?
It's not expensive. It is and it isn't, right? Like, if you think about it, it's $20 a month and I don't have to do anything. I literally go to a website, I fill in some blanks. It's like a WordPress plugin. Mm. I fill in the fields, I hit enter, it's done. But as I'm trying to force myself to learn this stuff, the victims of me learning this are SaaS. Like, just it's easy pickings, man. I look at my bill at the end of the month and I'm like, I don't really want to pay $20 for that anymore. And I can build something that is sufficient for what I need, my own little sort of tool set. I don't need to pay $20 for that. So I'll get rid of it. It's a freaking RSS feed.
Right. You pay $2 a month instead in AWS cost, right? Like,
yeah,
and then or I have to, however much it is.
Yeah, I have to host the MP. Is it MP3s? MP3s somewhere. I'm like, is it MP3 or MP4? Yeah. I don't know. It's MP3. So I put those in S3. It's going to cost me, like you said, $2.
Yeah. The cost S3, I guess you just use CloudFront.
Yeah, that's exactly it, which I already have all set up anyways, because the website is a static website hosted in S3 with CloudFront in front of it. Right. The estimates on the newsletter thing, it's 58 cents a month.
However much the SES bill is, right? Like,
essentially, that's, and you can send. I don't know what they charge you per 10,000 emails, but like, I'm going to send 800 emails in a month, maybe. Like, I don't have a big mailing list. So I guess it may become a problem if I suddenly balloon that mailing list to like 40,000 people, but the likelihood of that happening is probably pretty low. So, right? Like, it's not zero.
Have to go pretty viral. Yeah.
It's not zero, but you never know. So those are my new, I could keep talking, man. I could fill the next 45 minutes of time just talking about personal software. So yeah. And I've been reading the Vibe Coding stuff too. Really, really good book. Really good book.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, just like the feedback loop framework, it makes so much sense. Like if you can tighten those loops that they talk about, like the kind of instantaneous level, like the work level, and then there's like your hourly level and then your daily level feedback loops. Like, is your system improving over time?
Yeah.
Like that does a lot for working with agentic tools.
Two things I've noticed. Trying to think what, one more thing on what you just said there, because you jogged my memory. Two things I've noticed. You don't build features just because you can, right?
And yeah,
I caught myself at the very beginning because it was cool, right? It was fun. I was just like, Claude, let's brainstorm something really neat. And it's like, you should create a graphical representation of all the nodes in your open brain and how they're related. And I was like, ooh, cool. And then I caught myself. I'm like, I don't need that, right? Like that's,
I'm never going to use that.
I'm going to click on that button once. And then that'll be it. I'll never look at it again. So that there's that. And then the other thing I noticed is just you're talking about the feedback loops. For me, what's worked really well is I might not have the agent do the work, but the moment I come across something, like an issue of some sort, like in Kanban, I was supposed to be able to drag things between columns. And that was working. But I noticed when I tried to drag it out of the blocked column, back into like, hey, now I'm working on this. It's, you know, Travers gave me what I needed. I'm going to continue to work on it. It wouldn't work. It was giving me some sort of weird error. So I created a card for that, an issue in GitLab, put in the error message, and I just let it sit. But at least it was captured. And then at the end of the day, I was like, hey, go look at the issues. I didn't like in the moment go, I wrote this issue, go fix it. I kind of let a few things build up through the day. But at least I was capturing them at that moment when it was kind of fresh in my head, and then asked the agent after the fact, hey, go look at these and, you know, pick a couple things, like go work on whatever you want to work on. I'm going to go have some dinner.
Yeah, I love that. Like the low friction of just being able to shift that off into a GitHub issue, whatnot, and look at it later. And like, that's kind of the perfect use case for this stuff, right? It's just like, there's 50 kind of low quality or just kind of busy work issues that need to get done that are like maintenance issues. But I don't want to go and do those. I want to go and think about how this app is supposed to actually work. I don't need you to go and write features for me. I need you to close all these, you know, these busy work issues. Real, and that's bugs, where
real issues, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing
Oh,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the one thing you were saying about like check it at the end of the day, I may try out the new loop feature in Cloud Code.
Oh.
Right. And okay. It's essentially like cron, right? So I can say, hey, loop every hour, every 60 minutes, go check GitHub or GitLab for issues. And if you want to work on something, work on something. If you don't think it's pressing, then don't work on it. Right. Right. So I have had it push back on me a couple times. It's like, well, do you really think this?
You really need this?
And I'm like, maybe not.
I don't know.
One last thing. It's not a personal project, but we got some great feedback from the last episode when we were talking about personal projects. And a former colleague of mine told me that they basically published a game on Steam.
No way.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Do we know the game? What's the game?
I can't. Oh, damn. This is horrible. I should remember. Because
that is so cool.
Isn't that cool? So I will share it with you and I'll put it in the show notes because he's like, okay. And I don't want to put words in his mouth. I don't know exactly what tools he was using to do this, how much of it was, I'm just going to borrow from our favorite book right now, how much of it was vibe coded versus, you know,
right.
Handcrafted, if you want to think of it that way, or not, right? So I don't know. But he did say to me, he's like, I'm glad I'm at the finish line. This thing is running me a little ragged at this point. It looks pretty cool. So I'll share it in the notes and I'll put it in Discord for you. You can have a look at it. Not really my type of game. It's like a fast-paced shooter, which like a top-down 2D kind of thing. But I know that's his.
Oh, cool.
He loves those games. So I'm not surprised that this is what he's built. Pretty neat.
It's like a Hotline Miami situation.
Yeah, it's
that's
like
sweet.
This. Yeah, you have to see it, man. I don't even know how to describe it. It looked cool. I don't know what it's worth. I'm gonna throw a few Steam bucks at him, just as a vote of confidence that
fair
what
enough.
He built was cool. Right? So that's my other bit of personal news.
That's awesome. Games are so hard to make. I know. If you're out there listening and you've not made a game before or tried to get a game delivered, there's so much that goes into a game that you have to think about before you actually have something that you can ship. Like there's art assets, there's audio assets, there's menu assets, there's mechanics, there's the engine, and then there's the actual, you have to make something fun at the end of that.
Yeah, you have to make something that somebody else would find cool to play. They'd spend their $20 or whatever on. And then invest hours of their life. I'm going to try to get him to come on the podcast.
Sweet. That'd be really cool.
Talk about what he did. I think that'd be fun. Fun episode.
Yeah.
I'm making a bunch of assumptions that he didn't code this all from scratch. Just because of the context of the conversation we were having, I did make an assumption that he's using tools to help him with this. I was poking at him earlier in the week, and I'll bother him again next week to see if he'd be willing to come on the show and tell us what was horrible and what was good.
Sweet. Yeah. I mean, a lot of game code is pretty repetitive and easy to hand off, right? As long, once you get the mechanics kind of nailed down, like the settings dialed in for your physics and whatnot, like movement is pretty straightforward.
But. I want to know, like, how hard is it just on the non-technical side? Like from
Oh, God, yeah.
What are the steps you go through to get a game listed and approved and all that kind of stuff? Like, I'd love to know the non-technical guts of how you make that work. Not that I have an intention of publishing a game. I would have no clue how to even, I'm not that creative, but it just, the mechanics of it, I think would be really interesting to know the hurdles that he went through to get it done.
Yeah. I wonder how similar it is to like an app store release, right? Like you probably have to give them your package.
Would be very,
pretty similar,
right? But yeah. Yeah, very cool. Any other personal project news you want to share before we move into industry?
What else am I working on? I'm constantly just piping YouTube videos and blogs into this brain assist. I'm just constantly hoovering up content that I like and synthesizing it and making documents. And will I ever use them for anything? I don't know, but
that's the beauty of a second brain though, right? Like,
yeah,
you found it interesting at that moment in time. Now you have a record of it, right? And if you ever want to refer to it, you don't have to remember. Like if I had I would have put notes in my open brain about like the game, the topics that I want. So when you asked me, I could have just said, "Hey, open brain, what the hell is that game called again?" And it would have fit it out because you can see how human brains, like I know what we're talking about, but I can't recall the details. That's what's great about a second brain, right? So yeah, I'm actually thinking of doing the same thing. This is the other thing I love about this is as you talk to people, personalized software, right? We're all writing the same shit.
Yeah, it's literally the same system, right? Like I have an agent that's taking all this stuff and I've hooked it up to an MCP server so my open code can pull from Brain 2 and you run vector search queries against it, like, and you've done pretty much the same thing with your
And my Kanban board is, my buddy was laughing because he's like, look, I built the same thing in his phone. It's a little different way to manage his to-do items, right? So he's building his own system that makes sense for him and how he likes to work, right?
Yeah, I've heard it said that there's infinite space for email clients and to-do apps. Basically, you can build billions of them.
Yeah,
one for each person.
And I think that's the beauty of this. So last thing I'll say, and then we'll move on, is that like you can build the system or systems that work for you, right? Regardless, honestly, regardless of the level of expertise that you have, developer or not, if you're careful and methodical about it, you can build the tools that make your life easier isn't the right word, but just work for the way that you like to work. right? It's so cool. So cool. Yeah. I can't get over it, man. I just constantly, my open brain is just filled with new ideas of stuff that I want to at some point build, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to the industry news that we collected. The first one was something I saw on the MIT feed that I follow, and it just caught my eye. It's about a system to help manage robot traffic in like large warehouses. And it was just the headline that caught my eye. It was like, robots, cool.
It's a cool headline.
Right? Yeah. And then what I noticed was, like, as I read the article, the complexity that goes into these systems is like mind-boggling to make sure, like, in a large warehouse, that things are smooth.
It's a lot of moving parts. You got to figure, like, in one of these warehouses, you can have like maybe 1,000 robots, maybe more, maybe less, somewhere in that ballpark, like for the big Amazon warehouses that you have to coordinate movement and prevent accidents and optimize for traffic, you know? So it's just like planning a city, basically.
Yeah.
And those are...
The thought was neat was just how it's like, it's sort of adjusting the algorithms and the pathing sort of on the fly, in the sense that if it's able to start seeing like congestion or something, or there's maybe a situation where robots do clank into each other, how it could then, you know, shift around that. Okay, we've got a bottleneck or something's gone wrong, so I don't want to send traffic there anymore, so we're going to work around that. I thought that was also a really neat part of the article. Just, they didn't get really into the details on how that works. It was more high level, but just kind of interesting in the thought that goes into making these systems work.
Yeah, just a really interesting kind of classical ML problem, right? Like, looks like they used a neural net approach.
Yeah.
To some reinforcement
learning in there.
Reinforcement learning. Yeah. RL to train on this, on simulations of this environment.
Yeah.
And they got 25% bump in throughput through there. Yeah. So
the simulations thought was interesting. Like, okay, in the Petri dish, it worked really well. But then if you were to put it into an actual warehouse with 1,000 robots, are you
going
to do that same improvement? Or in real life, are you going to have, like, the system isn't quite as perfect? I don't know. I would suspect that you would have other challenges to run into and if you tried it in a real warehouse.
Yeah, it looks like they rebalanced it. So they had like a random search component also.
Okay.
So they had some, some chaos in the routing algorithm.
Chaos.
Which is kind of
just a normal
thing. So maybe that gets you out of some bad situations with the that you might get into with, say, a trained model, right?
Yeah. But
still very cool.
Yeah, very neat. Very neat. If you're into robotics and AI and stuff and machine learning, it's an interesting read on sort of the thought that goes into how to build these systems. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
What's next? Oh, I put this one in my list because we've talked about it a couple times. Claude Dispatch. And this is
from
Ethan Mollick, again, One Useful Thing, writes a lot of really interesting articles. And what he was basically saying in here was that it's really coming down to getting the tools, very similar to what we were just talking about, getting the tools in front of you in the way that you like to use them. So sort of moving away from this concept of chatbots all the time. And now, like, you're on your phone and you've got Claude Dispatch and you can fire off a research job on your home machine while you're maybe out doing something else. You know, his example was he worked on PowerPoint updates or tasked Claude through Claude Dispatch to go and do that while he was off doing something else.
Yeah, totally. It's like the friction is lowered even further, right? Like, how do you want to work? You can do it, which is good, because I hate using the chat apps.
Yeah,
me too. I don't know about you, but I don't like the web UIs.
Yeah, I think it's just because I've used the CLI now so much. Like, I tried going to Claude Cowork the other day to do something.
Oh yeah.
And I was just like, I'm just going to use Claude Code to do this. Like, it'll do the same thing. It's, you know, as far as I know, it'll do the same thing. And it just felt easier for me in in the CLI than in Claude Cowork. And the other thing I noticed is that Cowork has an upper limit on the number of MCPs you can use.
Oh no.
Yeah. Okay. It had MCPs, but it didn't have the ones I wanted. I wanted OpenBrain in there. Just sort of, I don't know how it decides on where it's going to chop, but I don't know if it's just counting from the top down. It's a limitation, I guess, in Claude Cowork right now. So I was like, oh, well, this sucks because now I rely solely on OpenBrain. You don't have the context and I don't want to start again. So I'll just Claude code.
When you use a tool, I can actually use my tool in. Thank you very much. Yeah,
exactly. Right. I have been playing with Claude Dispatch a little bit. I don't know if you've tried this.
No, not yet.
I don't know. I need to use it a little more. Like we were out the other day and I was like, okay, well, I was trying to do some market research, right? And we had gone out. I think we were actually, it was the night that we went to watch Project Hail Mary. So we were going out and I'm like, okay, well, I'll task this thing from my phone and just to try it. And it was weird. I don't know what it said. Oh, well, I don't have any memories. And I'm like, no, I don't want you to have a memory. I want you to start this from scratch. And probably user error more than anything. Like I've literally used it 3-4 times.
Maybe, but like, is it running? So you send a dispatch, I guess that's tied to your Claude account, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I guess that queues it there. So you have to be running Claude on some other machine then, I suppose.
It's essentially firing up the work on my laptop.
Yeah.
When I'm away from my laptop and I send a message on my
phone. Okay. That's kind of interesting. I mean, it makes sense. It's kind of like, there's like a flywheel thing you're trying to think about with this kind of stuff, right? Like I want to just send off a task into that system and have it spit out, okay, it's in queue, and then notify me when you have something worth looking at or whatever. Or I'll go and search for it, actually, is my preferred workflow. Like I don't necessarily want to be notified all the time when something is done.
Yeah, I get enough notifications. Like I try to limit it. Like only tell me about the important stuff. Like I don't care if you just finished the task. Like that's fine. Just continue doing other shit. You don't need to tell me everything you've done. Log it so that we have it for later, but you don't need to tell me all the time. Right.
Yeah. Like this is something.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, something I've seen from Mitchell Hashimoto made a good point about this was like, you want to be the one doing the important, there's like project defining work, right? And then you don't necessarily want to be interrupted in that flow state by random agent pings that they're done with this thing or not. You want to go off and look at it when you need to, right?
Same. Yeah. And you know, I'm when we were talking about sort of that levels of AI autonomy or whatever it's called, you know, one of the things that I did right away was work in notifications, and it just uses a simple notify shell script that fires up a Mac notification.
Oh yeah, you get the toast. Yeah,
I've almost turned all of those off now. Like,
I believe it.
Like, okay, like you can work on these things without me. You don't need to tell me every single time. I will go look when I'm done doing something over here. I will look. And if I need to run a merge request or task you with something else, that's fine. You don't need to pop up. Doing, doing, doing. It was kind of neat at the beginning because I was like, this actually didn't work, right? So I wanted to sort of be more engaged with it. And now I'm just like, hey, man, you go do your thing. You don't have to bother me so much. My slightly cynical take on things like dispatch and the new loop feature that I mentioned, it feels like a bit of response to Claude Bot.
It totally is.
Right?
It totally is, yeah.
Yeah.
This is, everyone went nuts for OpenClaw, I guess that's the newest one, right?
Yeah.
Or newest name.
Yeah.
And like everyone in the Valley is going bonkers over this system. And I guess this is their answer. Yeah.
Yeah. I must therefore have those same features.
Yep. Yeah. Same with these agents that AWS is releasing, right? It's very similar.
Yeah. Same idea. The other thing that I found funny about dispatch is that I'm so used to on my phone, like if I'm texting, I expect a response. So
yeah,
that's the message, and it just the asynchronousness of it felt weird. I'm like, are you doing anything? Like that's it. The irony is I turn off notifications on my laptop, but with this thing, I'm like, I did text.
You want to know?
I'm like, is this working? Like, are you on? So you have to get used to that fact that it is working, but it doesn't seem to give you, it doesn't surface a lot of sort of visual indications that it's actually doing something. Again, could be user error, right? But I thought it was weird. I had a hard time with it.
There's gotta be a way to configure like an answer or something. Like, cause like, that's the thing. Like you have this thing that's churning like this, like, the dark factory metaphor. You've got that black box sitting in the background, right? But you still need some kind of like interface agent there. Actually, you don't want it to be doing the work. I think you want it to be like tracking the work, and you want to be able to pull up the work through that agent and get progress reports and that kind of thing, and have it tell you that stuff's actually happening, but you don't want to get nothing out of that.
Right? Like, you don't need to tell me like every bit of minutia, but I want to know that there's progress. Isn't that the idea of like orchestrator agents? Like, it's not doing work, but it's making sure the other agents are doing stuff, and then maybe having some sort of mechanism to let you know that things are happening.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it can be, right? Like, you can have different levels of that. I don't know. At a certain point, it's like, are you doing too much in that system? Like, how much of that do you actually need? And as the models get better, like, maybe you need less of that orchestration. But trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I guess too. If we continue to go back to those levels, the more involved you are, obviously you have to trust what it's building. But the more involved you are, then the further away you are from that idea of the dark factory where you just give it a spec and it does its thing. So I guess it's like anything, you got to find the right balance that makes sense for you and what you're trying to build, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you want a dim workshop instead of a dark factory.
I like it. So that's level 4.5.
Dim workshop.
I like it. That's great. I'm going to figure out some way to start using that. Okay. I put this article in. It was thoughts on slowing down. Just because, you know, it felt like, okay, let's avoid some hype here and talk about these things seriously. I do think, I don't know if you agree with this or not, there's really no middle ground, right? There's like, AI is the worst thing that's ever happened. All it's going to create is garbage, 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 versus AI is the best thing that's ever happened. It will save humanity. There's nothing in between. And I understand why, because if you write those articles in the middle, nobody cares because you're not sort of emotional response. And I did think that this article sort of tried to hit on some type of emotional response to kind of get you riled up, in the sense that, you know, oh, well, you know, because AI agents are so fast, there's no way for us to ensure it's quality code. And then you're just increasing your overall technical debt because you really don't know what's there. You know, there's a comment in the article that Microsoft admitted to 30% of all their code is now written by AI, and that's why Windows sucks.
Weapons. I mean,
I know. I installed Windows from like 47 3.5-inch floppy disks. Like, that's how old I am.
Oh yeah,
and it sucked back then too. Right?
Windows has sucked forever. It's just sucked a little less.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure they weren't writing any AI tools when I was installing that off 3.5-inch floppies. Right?
So, yeah, probably not.
Yeah. I don't know. Did you get a chance to look at this article? Like, I just kind of thought it was a little weird.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Totally. I mean, it's like you said, it's super polarized, right? I do like some of the points he makes, though. Mm-hmm. It's, like the idea that these tools can be, if you just set them loose, they could be like unbridled slot machines, right? Like you can just churn out so much complexity really quickly. And it's like we were talking about with features you don't need, right? Like if you don't have a good sense of what you want to build, you're going to get garbage out.
Yeah.
And you're going to see a lot of code base bloat. And then once your code base bloats, these tools stop being effective and you won't know how to fix anything.
Yeah.
So
we talked about that last week, right? As the code base gets big, they tend to not be as effective. Yeah. But this goes to the theme that we talked about before, right? Like you are still responsible for the code that this generates. And if you let it generate shit code and ship it, then is it really the agent's fault that
happened? No.
It's the human in the loop, right? Like you have some responsibility. So yeah, I understood his points. some of them I thought were a little like setting limits on how much code is generated by an agent per day. To me, that just seems like you're swimming upstream. Like, I don't know. I think the game's already over. Like, I'm sorry, but you better figure out how to operate in this space, or you, in my opinion, you're going to get left behind.
Yeah, like that's a review and testing problem, I think. Like that is, and like a maybe like a branching strategy problem too, right? Like it's so, I mean, it's hard to, it's also brand new, right? There's a lot of interesting work being done on how to maintain code bases that are, you have these agents let loose on, right? And one strategy I've seen is like you can create a bunch of work trees in Git and then have agents work on. Yeah. That seems relatively effective.
Yeah. It's working for me so far. Knock on wood. And But see, this is, you just made me think of something. This is what's interesting about this. Like, people always say, oh, well, you can tell when it's AI and Git because, you know, it's the merge request or whatever shit. Right, you can just tell.
Sure.
And I'm like, okay, I get it. But I look at a lot of merge requests from humans, and it's like fixed bug. And I'm like, thanks, Dan.
Yeah, yeah, awesome, great.
And I look at the merge request in GitLab, and there's like 47 commits, and it's like the comment is fixed bug. Like,
I'll say my PR note quality or my Git commit quality has gone way up lately.
Oh yeah, man. And you know what? This to me is just a great example. I have standards docs. You've probably seen this because you probably know the customer you're talking about. We have a standards doc that says thou shall use conventional commits. Here's the standard. You don't have to use the whole thing, but we expect to see these. I still get fixed bug, and I'm like, I'm sure you read the doc, right? And then I'm like, I enjoy now reading real merge requests. Like somebody's, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's AI. You didn't write that. And I'm okay with that because it's actually telling me what it is that you did or had your agent do. And I can read it and understand what the hell it is that you're asking me to do on your behalf by having to submit the merge, right?
Right.
The other thing that I've...
Go
ahead.
I was gonna say, as long as you've actually put the work in to review the work you're submitting for PR beforehand, right? Like, don't just submit garbage.
But that's still on the person. It's still on the person. It goes back to the same thing, right? Like, if you're just going to go, I have a task to do, and I'm just going to offload it, and I don't really give a crap, and then submit the merge request, and the merge request looks great, I'm going to still go through the code to some extent. I'm not probably going to look at every single line that's in there, but... like you're ultimately still responsible for what it is you're submitting, right? So yeah, it all comes back to the person. The other really cool thing that I've noticed, just because we're talking about Git now, is how many people are learning about Git.
Yeah, that is cool. I mean, Git's not that old, really, if you think about it.
No.
Like when did it come out? Like 2000, mid-2000s, anyways.
You'd have to Wikipedia it for me or ask your agent. Like just today, we were talking about work trees, and I'm sitting having a coffee, and somebody's like, okay, well, I figured out work trees. And this is a non-technical person. And I'm like, that's awesome. Like, and then
that's
like,
cool.
Now I'm working on like making sure I understand how merge requests work and stuff. This is like a non-technical person that's learning about stuff because that's how they want to use, that's how they want to build their own personalized software with their agents. That's great, man.
Right. That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, you love to see that. Yeah.
People are,
that's someone who's learning something. Again. Yeah.
Right. They're excited about IT stuff again. It's really cool.
It's fun. It's definitely more fun with this. I find anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Okay. TurboQuant. Want to walk us through some Google research?
Oh yes. So this was a crazy article that kind of hit the scene this week and caused a major stir in, you know, amongst the computer enthusiast scene and in like memory stocks also. Mm-hmm. But basically what it is, Google has released, essentially they have a process by which they can quantize their, my phone just procced because of that. Okay, they can quantize their model. So in such a way that they can compress the RAM usage down 6x. And everyone kind of jumped at that and assumed that, wow, okay, so they're going to need 6x less RAM, right? Yeah.
RAM price can go down.
My counter argument would be, why wouldn't they just use 6x more RAM? But
yeah,
it probably will.
But yeah, that's the gist of it. It's like essentially a compression algorithm for RAM usage for LLM inference specifically. So you can compress the state space down into kind of a float instead of it's like a dimensional reduction thing. That's the gist of it.
Yeah, that's really cool. So basically, you get the same quality from your models with less memory usage.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's great all around, I would say, right?
Yeah, especially when we're moving to models hosted on smaller devices, right? Like you can do inference on less hardware with that potentially. So that's a big deal.
Yeah, that's cool. Very cool. What's next? Oh, I chuckled when I saw this one. The AWS architecture blog, architecting for agent AIs. Why don't you walk us through that one too? And I'm going to pull up as you start.
I am going to pull it up too. So this is essentially, it's an AWS blog post by Alan Roberto Jimenez. And they're essentially talking about why your traditional kind of web app architecture is not so great necessarily for development architecture is not so great for AI agent systems, right? So if you're developing with AI agents, and this kind of comes back to the feedback loop thing, you really want early and often to give the systems that are generating code feedback on the performance of that code. So you really want to build your systems to include linters, language servers. You want your CI/CD and your tests to be easily repeatable and often run, right? So the graphic they kind of give you, and obviously they're using Kiro because it's AWS, but the pipeline kind of looks like this. You have Kiro submitting code to a local Lambda with a local Amazon DynamoDB server set up, and then iterating there, and then they'll push it out to using the CDK, right? And then through code build and code pipeline, and then they'll actually push it to production, right? So I think the gist of this is that if you have a local development environment that you can run all your tests on quickly, then you'll get a better result out of this.
Yeah. I'm smiling for a couple reasons. Like, as much as things change, they all stay the same. I looked at this, I had to pull it up because I wanted to remind myself of the diagram. Like this is CI/CD 101. Like I want it to fail fast. I want it to fail as close to the developer as possible. Local tests, right? All that kind of stuff. This is exactly the same. And then the other thing that made me laugh was like, I cringed a little when I saw the stage in their feedback loop with code build. And I'm like, aren't we trying to move faster? Every single time. Here's my hot take. Code build is so slow. Oh my God. Jesus. Like, what are you doing? I know you can throw different size machines at it, but come on.
Yeah.
Right?
Could you host it on Fargate or something? Or am I thinking of something else?
I bet you. I don't know. I avoid it at all costs.
Nah, anyways.
I taught a class last week and I was like, oh, these labs are all code build. I'm like, oh my God. Right? And students are like, is it working? It's very similar to what we just talked about. I'm like, it's working. It just takes a while. Go get a copy. That's why all these labs are super long. Go grab a coffee. I'll show you where you can click the button where you can watch the logs in just very slowly stream by. So you at least know it's alive. I'm being clickety here, right? A little bit, but it made me chuckle when I saw that. I was like, oh, and I understand it's an AWS article, so they're only going to show you AWS tools, but I like the concept. Fail fast, fail as close to developer as possible. I love the fact that they said local Lambda, local Dynamo, right? Like, you know, there's lots of different ways you can do that now. If you're using like the SAM tool, you can do it. You can do this
a lot with SAM now.
Sorts of different ways. Are you using SAM a lot?
I have used it here and there when I've been working like with just like Lambda, small Lambda apps, basically. And it's pretty good for that.
It's great. I love the fact that you've got that local testing, right? And you can do local API gateways. It supports a lot of sort of local stuff. And But I love the idea of this. I think I would temper it a little bit with, just because you see a whole bunch of AWS icons here doesn't mean you have to use AWS to build this, right? Like,
that's true.
Insert tool, you know, use the best tool for the job, as AWS would say, unless they're writing blog post.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It is funny that it is like the slowest deployment loop you could possibly imagine, basically. It's CloudFormation into code.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they're not telling you.
There you go.
I won't throw any more. Or Kiro. Okay. And then the last article that we got here is something you shared just before we started. The source code for Quad was leaked.
So this was crazy. This is kind of breaking news maybe of the past few days.
Yeah.
But I don't, have you heard about this?
Until I saw the article, no, I hadn't. So I quickly skimmed it before. And before we jumped on the podcast. So walk us through it.
Okay. So essentially what happened was they leaked the entire source code for Cloud Code in a very funny way. They packaged it in, like they leaked a one of the deployment files that you use for TypeScript apps.
Yeah.
That essentially has all of the source code in it, right?
Yeah.
So they published that. And someone was able to pull that down, and then they got access to the entire source.
Cloudflare or something, right? Cloudflare RSU storage or something they said in the article?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
And somebody quickly extracted it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's been really interesting to kind of see the architectural decisions that go into something like this. I mean, we have Codex open source from OpenAI, right? Yeah. And there's a couple of other really good coding agents out there, but it's really, there was a couple of things that really stuck out to me about Anthropic's design choices here.
Yeah,
and
walk us through them. Got a couple thoughts.
Okay. Yeah. So the first thing that's interesting is a lot of this is just classical programming, like just techniques that we've had for 50 years that are kind of rapping and doing a little dance to make it seem magical, right?
Yeah.
One thing that is really funny was there's sentiment analysis in this tool, right?
Yeah.
So if you type in something nasty to Claude, it'll pick it up. Do you want to guess how it picks it up?
It's like some sort of really simple loop or something. Like, what's it do?
It's just a regex.
It's a regex.
It's a regex. Yeah, it has a list of words like angry words, essentially. Curse words and whatnot. Yeah. And then if it flags that in the message or prompt you send, it'll be like, okay, the user is in a negative state.
Oh, so what we have here is Wizard of Oz. It looks
magical until you pull the curtain back and it's
if else statements in regex.
Yeah, pretty much. But it's, another interesting thing I saw though was that there's measures in there for anti distillation techniques, right? So you know how there's been accusations of the Chinese labs using distillation to train their models, which is essentially you run a series of prompts against Anthropic's model or OpenAI's a larger model, and then you extract the results and you tune your model to be more like that model, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They will detect that and they will feed fake tool calls to the output. So they'll poison the output to affect the training results. Yeah.
Wow.
So there's like a whole arms race going on in that department.
Man.
Yeah. But now that this is leaked, there's a bunch of people who are helpfully creating repos that are ports to Rust and open source and that kind of thing. So
I read in the article there, like how many Git repos I guess it's okay as long as GitHub's up that you can actually look at
if you can get to GitHub.
Yeah. Someone posted an uptime graph the other day and it was like, you can tell when the purchase happened. It was a nice green line and then it would just like fell off a cliff. I don't know if that was a meme or real stats, but it made me chuckle. The other thing that I kind of on this one, you know, my slightly cynical Wednesday evening take on this is, I know in the article they're like, it was human error, right? But AWS said it was human error when
Cost Explorer went away. Like, I wonder, was it really human error, or was it an agent that just sort of made a little bit of a mistake and published something supposed to, right?
If you're Anthropic, maybe that's the same thing.
Probably. All right, man. That is it. You want to wrap us up with any quick recommendations for the week?
Sure. Let's see. Quick recommendations. What did we watch last week? We watched The Mummy 2 for movie night. I can't recommend The Mummy 2.
Is that like the original?
That's the second. With Brendan Fraser. The first one's kind of fun. The second one is not very good.
It's funny how
I'm going to go watch the Mario movie today.
Are you really?
Yep.
After this. Everywhere I go now, his Mario stamped on boxes. Not in my watch list, but I hope you enjoy it.
Sure, I will.
Yeah.
Grab it.
We went to see Project Hail Mary, I mentioned earlier on. That movie was fantastic, outside of the fact that I paid for D-Box seats without realizing it, and they didn't do shit. And we were talking about inshittification and this idea of corporate inshittification. I'm gonna complain. So
yeah,
I search, finally find a chatbot that I can use. I fill everything out. I hit enter and it's like, oh, thank you for request. Sorry, there are no agents available right now. Later. And then the best part was it gave me a response to say, how did we do? Like, he really want me to answer that?
He don't want to know.
Okay.
Thumbs down.
On, guys. So, yeah. The movie itself was fantastic. I think it did a really great job at the representing the book itself. That's got to be my recommendation for the week. You know, if you haven't seen it and you're into kind of space sci-fi, definitely worth a watch. And Ryan Gosling. Does he win awards for that? I would think he does, right?
I think he will.
Yeah.
He was so good.
So good.
That's got to be, it's going to be movie of the year for me, I think. It's going to be really tough to unseat that.
Well, Super Mario, man, could be right there.
Oh, well, you never know. Oh, you never know.
Maybe.
Mario's going to be space too. Galaxy.
Yeah, oh, Mario Galaxy. You might change your mind after the late show tonight. Are you getting D-Box seats for that one, or are you just, you know, sitting still for a couple hours?
Well, we're going VIP.
Oh, VIP.
Cushy, so recliner,
seats. That's right. Yeah, very good, man. All right, well, enjoy the movie, and we will see everybody back here next Wednesday.
Yep.
Bye for now.
Take care.